Welcome, everyone, to the Runways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is the spark to the podcast. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
Dominoes, Playboy. Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 203, Double Zeros, is sponsored by Livy's Holistic Hair Care Products. Arnica gonna try some today?
Pete, how could we not? What, keeping those locks looking good, etc. So glad to be talking Runaways. Just a reminder, if you want to share your feedback, if you want to be like the famous Fred, like DJ Black, we are recording a little bit ahead, so make sure that you're getting it to us via social media, via email, via Facebook Messenger, via your YZ communication device, whatever it is. Make sure you get it out there nice and early.
Certainly hope everybody had a Merry Christmas, and there are some treats in your stocking if you haven't already checked.
Yes, on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, we've been talking a whole litany of things, Once Upon a Deadpool being one of them. Also, we have, of course, done our Christmas Story commentary track, and a couple days ago, talked some Aquaman. It's a great time to be alive. Pete, don't want to forget, too, we have one more goodie coming to the Pop Culture Podcast feed, a rerun of our commentary track for the Star Wars Christmas special that dropping tomorrow, and that we are entertaining. But you know what? If you don't want to watch, dear listener, if you don't want to make your way through that Star Wars holiday special, no offense taken.
Well, let's get to that Runaways recap. After ripping down a missing flyer of the Runaways, Molly frees a young woman from the grip of a pimp who is shocked she's a girl. Get with the times. And she has the same eyes as someone the woman knows. Nico is already up and ready to practice. She calls an overdue Alex. Gert is dragging and chases out Cold. Alex makes a delivery for Darius and learns how to play Dem Bones. He used to play with Jeffrey at Nana B's house, which he's never talked about. Tamar notes because he didn't want to acknowledge his roots. Darius beats Alex and gets a text from Jeffrey. At their home, the Wilders pack and load up to bring Alex to the Dominican. Molly returns but gets caught by Nico. She shows her mask, but doesn't have a code name yet. She begs her not to tell Gert, which Nico refuses to honor, but Molly swears nobody saw her. Nico demands she not do it again. Molly gets to sit out power practice where Carolina levitates, Chase sets a mannequin ablaze, and Nico extinguishes it. Gert has a bout of brain lightning because she's not taking the anti-anxiety drug sertraline. Chase tries to focus her with lacrosse coach wisdom, but only makes her mad. Nico blocks Chase's first fistigons, but not the second time. At the Church of Gaborim, Frank wishes his worshipers well. Leslie comes to see him, and they take a walk. He tells her he didn't steal the church from her, but is, instead, doing this for his family. He knows Jonah's using him and wants to get rid of that pompous ass clown once and for all. Jonah catches them, and Leslie tries to lie to him about her rapport with Frank. Alex is learning from Livy that Compton is not just crime and poverty. She's going to move out with the success of her holistic hair care products. He asks to kiss her, and then if he can take it a little bit further. Victor is close to completing his work for Jonah, but Jonah wants him to speed it up, which causes Victor to confront him. While Jonah maintains Victor is only there until he's better, Victor thinks it's just to do Jonah's bidding. Victor tries to punch him, but Jonah's not really there. Victor stomps off. Darius picks Alex up for another run. Chase thinks they need a game plan, which Alex always took care of. Nico says they don't need him, but they could use his brain. Gert gets snappy with Chase after he defends Carolina's religion. Chase asks Molly to help him with the Rolls Royce. Jonah asks Janet for advice to help Victor cooperate. Having hit a wall in her attempt to translate the abstract, she demands Jonah put her into the memory to see Victor alone. Molly gives Chase relationship advice about Gert. She advises him not to give up on her. Darius advises Alex not to get too caught up with Livy or anyone else for that matter. Got to stay woke because you can't win without discernment, as Nana B would say. After all, Darius wants Alex to win, which is why he's driven him to a warehouse where his father is waiting. As Alex gets into the car, Jeffrey admits Darius beat him, but never at dominoes, which he always lost on purpose. Or did he? Jeffrey apologizes for all of it, but Darius just wants what he owes him, the deed to the construction site, albeit 20 years late. The crew's moving out and will be gone in a few weeks, but this ends their dealings. He also hands him a key to a suite at the Gordon Hotel to give Darius, Tamar, and the baby a little taste of their new life. Jeffrey wants the phone Darius gave Alex so they can't be tracked. He tells him they're taking him somewhere safe, and Alex dials Not the One, aka Nico, so she can hear he's in trouble and headed to the Van Nuys airport. She tells the rest of the runaways, and they start the car with the staff. Janet visits Victor and learns he lied about his past. His father was not a banker, after all, but a cook. He swears he's changed, and she reveals she was the one who shot him and not Robert Minoru. He wants out, but they're going to do it her way and build the box for Jonah. She asks for his alien cryptological skills to decipher the abstract, and she unlocks it with the power of math, particularly the wave equation. An interactive holographic map opens up. At the airport, the kids ambush Jeffrey and rescue Alex. When Nico can't restart the stalled Rolls Royce, Nico builds a wall and makes Jeffrey pay for it, allowing them to escape. Darius heads to the swanky hotel suite and texts Tamar to come. There he finds Catherine, who tells him Jeffrey doesn't know he's there, and shoots him twice so he can take the rap for Destiny Gonzalez's murder. She calls Detective Flores, and Tamar arrives at the crime scene to discover from the cops Jeffrey's been killed. Alex and Nico hear over the radio that Darius is dead and they've been cleared. They reconnect over Super Nintendo like he and Amy used to. Hadouken. Molly saves another woman from the pimp, this time throwing his ride, but is seen by an unseen figure. She returns to their hideout and gets caught by Gert, and Topher reveals himself to the runaways.
Pete, let's talk villains in this episode, of which there are a plenty. I guess first up has got to be that pimp, what got his cars clocked cleaned by the end of the episode.
Listen, Matt, pimping ain't easy. It's hard out there for a pimp. However, it's wrong.
It is. And I think of all the story choices that the episode could use in terms of finding a villain, you know, low-level villain for one of the runaways to test their powers with, I mean, let's all agree that this guy is in a terrible business, and it's also one kind of separate from what the lady in the equation is doing. You know, I've never completely understood why they can't self-represent. I guess good news is I really don't understand that world very well, but it's a great moment of practical effects when he gets his car turned upside down.
And to have Molly going out as the least likely of any of our runaways to rescue two women here, obviously with the story end game of attracting Topher back to their mansion and making that connection there, it's a necessary evil.
It is, and I think we oftentimes see these kind of lower-level villains that help a story along. I think of how just a couple days ago we were talking Aquaman, and that's kind of the role of Black Manta to a certain degree. And when done well, it kind of doesn't call attention to itself in terms of, here's what pimp character must do. He must let someone go out and display her powers and bring another, help facilitate another person getting back to the hideaway. It just feels seamless, and that's good writing.
With Jeffrey, it's a different type of villainy here, the type that would allow you to betray your best friend coming up.
This tension that Jeffrey has lived with in terms of his origins and where he is headed or has ended up now that he's, successful and in Brentwood and all of that. It's an interesting notion. What is that line when you kind of come from a lower economic status, dare say with no disrespect intended, but kind of the notion of less social status from a place like Compton. And I think that on the one hand, we can be kind of sympathetic in terms of he's wanted to improve himself, but you also can't deny where you came from. You can't forget your origins, can't forget your roots, and can't look back to lend a hand.
Yeah, and that he's attempted in the new crowd he runs with, ignore where he's come from, turn his back on it. Whereas somebody like Darius went to jail for something Jeffrey did, and, under the guise of payback and this apology, and then what happens ultimately to Darius, which Jeffrey may or may not be in on.
Well, and to wrap up the thoughts on Jeffrey here, I think that you rightly raise a great point in terms of there being a certain sense of responsibility that he has to note where he came from and to try and help out. I think that, any bunch of people, when you're on your way up, you should be lending that hand back. I mean, my goodness, Pete, it's the holiday season. Isn't that what it's all about? Helping out those that are in a lesser position than we.
Helping only himself, but needing help from others, Matt, is Jonah.
That scene where he shows up on the church campus and Frank seemingly, not even seemingly, I'll give him full credit, Frank in charge of the current situation. People are, thanking him for a great sermon and all of that. He seems so at home there in what I will assume is a genuine kind of religious thing. Let's kind of remove the whole stealing homeless off the streets to feed Jonah thing. That was not necessarily, or not even necessarily, that was not a function of the Gaborim Church. But Frank seems so stable. Leslie cuts on in there, disrupting things. And then the way this episode gets shot, all of a sudden it seems like Jonah appears. Now, I'm not suggesting magic transportation or things of that sort, but just the way the camera all of a sudden has him way off to the side there on the side of the path, on the side of the screen. Great camera work to just give this notion that this guy comes and goes to wherever he wants. He's a member in every club and can just show up anywhere.
Yeah, and between his connections to the church, between what he's doing with Victor and then allowing Janet into, I keep wanting to call it the framework, Matt, different Marvel show. We still don't have a name for what that is. I guess the memory is the best thing. I know they called it an algorithm, too. We're not going to refer to it as, let's go to the algorithm. Yeah.
That's a Netflix joint.
But it's not a place. to do these things, yeah, the creepiness of tailing them and then showing up in the memory and not being there and being punched, and it not landing. But he is behind the eight ball. He's degenerating, and he needs what Victor and Janet can provide him.
You mentioned it not being a place. Honest to goodness, Pete, I read an article yesterday, the headline of which was something akin to, Fortnite is not only a game, it is a place. So maybe we're behind the times.
Users, here. I mean, but pretty soon all that money's going to be gone. What with those lawsuits?
Pete, we'll save that for the Fortnite podcast by Fantastic Geek coming never. Moving on, Catherine here, I think we can all agree, saved the best villain for last in that she shoots a basically, maybe Darius wasn't honest in an objective sense, but certainly he was not a villain in terms of our narrative, and she shoots him dead and then frames him for all this other stuff, all to facilitate her own group's plan and then her own individual plan, or at least her family plan within the group plan. And is there an individual plan that her husband doesn't know about? Bad, bad stuff there from Catherine.
Caps him twice with the silencer TV code for you dead. Yeah. Calculating, awful, especially with his status as an expectant father, somebody now who thinks he's turned the corner, who has an opportunity to be an entrepreneur like Jeffrey, but intent on remembering where he came from. And now we will be only forced to remember him. R.I.P.D.
Pete, we shall long remember Darius indeed, just as hopefully our listeners can long listen to what we have to say. And that, of course, is made possible by those who visit patreon.com/fantasticgeek to help our virtual reality futures exist in the unnamed framework holodeck 3D goggle thing.
The season for giving is also the season for various entities to take from our accounts for all of our storage and bandwidth and the other costs that we have in bringing this thing to you. So we are certainly grateful for everybody who's been able to help us provide. And we give a little back as well there. Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content. So no matter what level you come in at, whether it's the Darius coming on up level or it's the Jeffrey, I have a Learjet on standby level, which Fantastic Geek does not. And nor will we tell you that God has told us that we need our parishioners to give us money for a Learjet so that we can spread the word of Fantastic Geek, because we're already heard in 86 countries. We don't need to fly to all 85 others.
Well, Pete, you mentioned Jeffrey and his plane there. What was Jeffrey's plan with the plane if it turns out that Catherine was not with him?
I think Catherine was going to meet them. I did think of that, given that the two scenes took place a little bit apart, but was clearly always intent on tying up that loose end and then meeting them at the Van Nuys airport. One for you, Matt. Who does Molly have the same eyes as? And I think this is interesting, given that we had the dialogue in the first episode that Graciela was her last blood relative. Could whoever else has these eyes, and, you know, we could look at a couple options in a moment, be a relative?
A relative that certainly could be the case. I wondered if maybe it was a powered relative, you know, someone with the same powers, which makes me think of Topher as a strong possibility, particularly since he has kind of elbowed his way into the story.
Why can't Nico use the same command twice? Is that a constraint that Tina was also held to with the Staff of One?
It would be interesting to go back and explore Tina's usage to see if that's just a thing that is true of the staff. Certainly, as presented in the episode, it felt like Discovery exposition to go, whoa, turns out rule of this thing. So that way we can't, you know, superpower everything all the time. We need to have a little kryptonite in there to slow things down. So it's not constantly, you know, ice blast wall, 30 feet thick. Ice blast wall, 30 feet thick. You know, you can only use each trick one time or figure out a way to say it. I read that as the case, particularly since I think as a powered tool, it needs some writerly reining in.
Did Jeffrey really throw those games of dominoes, or was this another way, like it seems, to get in Darius's head?
That is a question I had for you. I vote on the side of Jeffrey is trying to cover up these losses through Jedi mind tricks. What do you say? Give us Decision Pete 2018.
I think that Jeffrey threw them, that he's a mind game player. They weren't important to him, as he said, and that Darius needed them. And what happened later on? He got Darius to take the fall for him. So he plays that long game, Jeffrey does.
Speaking of Darius there, will we get hashtag justice for Darius in a later episode? Will the story really leave Tamar out in the cold?
I don't see how it can, particularly that Livy's been involved here. And I have to ask, is Livy in danger now as loose ends to Darius? Surely she would be questioned, how did you know to be here? Why were you coming, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, Flores is there to kind of, you know, keep tabs and maybe, you know, help the pride out. But Livy's an unknown loop here at this point, just kind of hanging out there. So I really have to worry about her well-being.
Is the show reticent to show Carolina and Nico kissing, quote-unquote, too much? Maybe I'm a bit influenced by a social media post that the Runaways account had where the two of them had mistletoe but then looked at each other and Nico held up a hand to the camera and then it kind of blurred to the Runaways logo. It struck me like in this episode they were showing them together, but not too controversially together, because we don't want to get the wrong kind of people tweeting about this and demanding another James Gunn head on a platter type thing.
Well, I think that's a little overcomplicated, as long as we know that no one associated with the Runaways has tweeted really bad, inappropriate things years ago that would suddenly be brought up. I did see that tweet as well in that video, but I'll point you to another one, Matt, maybe you didn't see, which seemed to be a Facebook Live discussion that the actress who plays Carolina and the actress who plays Nico were being asked, and they said if you like them as a couple. I believe the kids call them a ship. Matt, there's a lot of that this season, and there's a lot of kissing.
Well, you know what? Bring on that representation. Pete, a bit more, I mean, I suppose this was a serious topic, but a bit more kind of medically serious, kind of two-parter here. Is Gert too quick to reject Chase's 4-7-8 breathing technique? And while we're on the topic of Gert, let's talk the real-world sertraline that she's on, which is a heavy-duty antidepressant. I wonder, particularly as I was just reading the Wikipedia for it, you know, it's a heavy-duty drug, and I'm certainly not trying at all to make light of them exploring her requiring an antidepressant. But, you know, there's a increased suicide risk for those under 25 to take it. Like, this is a real drug. This is a heavy-duty drug, and again, don't want to downplay her need for it, but I'll bring it back to where I started the question. Should she have tried out that 4-7-8 breathing technique?
I think she should. Anything that came courtesy of a lacrosse coach, we know that Gert is going to reject. And that's even with Chase, somebody she has strong feelings for. suggesting it. So that was always going to be rejected. The side effects and the medicine, I was kind of surprised they name checked a real medicine that's not as known as some of the others that you might, you know, Xanax or something. You know, it's like Xerox. You know, you say you're going to go Xerox something or you're going to Google something. I'm surprised, you know, Xanax wouldn't be used here in place of the other one. But I guess they wanted to use this actual side effect, these brain zaps that happen with sertraline. So can't be anything but sympathetic for somebody that having gone off their medicine would not only experience that, which makes story sense that she's having a hard time communicating with old Lace, and that could potentially make old Lace affect that same disposition, and two, the litany of other terrible side effects.
Yeah, there's this sertraline, which is the generic for Zoloft. So maybe they were kind of splitting the difference there in terms of not using the whatever the proper.
They don't have their parents' health coverage anymore, Matt.
This is true. This is true. But yeah, some side effects. You know, digestive trouble, sexual dysfunction, trouble with sleep. I think that. If you're going to take
dinosaur dirt, communicating difficulty, you left out like the most important side effect. You can't communicate to your dinosaur when you're not taking that medicine or any medicine.
I don't know that that as a side effect has been explored by the FDA. That's the Food and Drug Administration for some of our pals abroad. I don't know if they've explored that either in our universe or the Marvel universe, Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I think you've hit upon the point here, Pete, which is, they want something that it has real side effects. So they're going to go with something that is real and something that, you know, it's going to be plausible if they want her to feel this way or that way as she comes off it. But I guess ultimately I credit the show for going with something real. I mean, similarly with the 4-7-8 breathing technique, which I'm not trying to say is the equal for those who are prescribed sertraline, but you know, inhaling for 4 seconds, holding your breath for 7 seconds, blowing out for 8 seconds and repeating. It's supposed to have a calming effect. I don't know. I mean, all this is good stuff, I suppose.
What did Janet unlock from the abstract?
I'm not sure, but the show continues to make really great use of Janet. I know that we spoke last time over the show seemingly rediscovering her intelligence, not that she was portrayed as dumb, but also, you know, her own education and capabilities were not something that the first season discovered much of. Here, Pete, aspirationally, without her man, she's able to reach even more potential. Good message there, particularly since her husband is a figurative monster and abusive and terrible and all those things. Maybe a little kind of quick in the episode for him to be like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. I really was terrible. Thanks for coming to visit me in 3D land, dear. I guess we'll see as that unfolds.
Jeffrey really didn't know Catherine was there. What would the point of Catherine telling Darius that Jeffrey didn't know prior to killing him be?
I think it's a sticky portion of story potentially that we could be in terms of, was some of this stuff written because they needed to reach the climax and they didn't think through, like, Jeffrey's ready to take off, except we don't know she's not there until later, but he should know because he's looked around and not seen her. Similarly, is she saying this to give Darius some sort of sense of peace in his final moments? Is she maybe struggling with whether she's sure to kill him or not? I think it's probably not the latter because she seems confident enough to kill someone and doesn't seem particularly, you know, full of remorse once the job is done. I think it might just be her own kind of victory lap to say, you know, no, this wasn't the great and mighty Jeffrey. Twas I mean, my goodness, Pete, that then makes me think we have multiple kind of triumphant female villains in this episode, taking credit for what they're doing, whether it's for good or for ill.
Lastly, who exactly is this Topher?
I think Pete, the story, and I don't know what the future holds in terms of the comic book and whatnot. I think this is somebody who can join the group, if not in name, certainly in presence, join it, and with that bring in his wake, you know, changes, who likes him, who doesn't, who likes him and who doesn't, what can he bring to the table in terms of powers, perspective, etc. I think it's just one of those things to kind of mix the paint can of story and get a new color. Speaking of powers, Pete, my most important theory question for you for this episode, Street Fighter Turbo, lesser than Street Fighter Tournament Edition?
There were quite a few different editions, particularly put out on Super Nintendo. Thankfully, I have the retrospective pack that has like all of them, but it was hyper confusing which hyper fighting game you were playing.
Well, Pete, with that, let's talk some listener feedback. Pete, who do we have feedback from?
That would be Fred in the Neverlands, Matt.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Runaways, Episode 3. The first big question I have is really the question that Victor asks Jonah. Is he really there in this? I had to look it up when Carter was elected. In this 1977 state, Jonah told him that he was there so that his mind could be at ease and that his body could recuperate. But if we see him in this glass box, I have the idea that his body looks quite okay. So is Jonah perhaps indeed keeping him there, as Victor suspects, just to do his work for him? And the second question is, of course, is Janet working for Jonah, or is she really going to help Victor? She told Jonah several times how difficult her life with Victor was, and actually she did shoot him. So is she really trying to get Victor back? And she does love him, although he is a very difficult person. And perhaps also because she wants to give Chase his father back. Or is she working for Jonah? Third point is, wow, that Nico is bossy as Tina, getting everybody out of bed early in the morning. You really see her mother there. And I think she was already like that before she had this wand, this staff. And I find it very funny that Molly became Daredevil. Okay, all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Always a treat, Pete, to hear from Fred. So what do you think? Is Jonah lying in the virtual reality land?
Well, I do need to help our friend from Holland here that Carter was elected in 1976, not 1977. He would have taken office in 1977. But is he helping? I don't think, apart from, you know, being held hostage. And he tells him here, he admits to it, that you're better, but he needs the work to be done so that he doesn't continue to decompensate as a result of whatever sickness or whatever exertion he's suffered.
I think Fred raises a really interesting point in terms of zeroing in on who is Janet working for, Jonah or Victor. And I think it's a particularly thoughtful question when you think of her past with Victor. You know, does the story have her running home metaphorically to her abusive husband? Is she trying to help the father of her son? Has she sold out the whole operation in order to be hashtag Team Jonah? Your thoughts, Pete?
It's Team Janet, Matt. Janet works for Janet because she has agency and she's already stated her motivation. She wants her son back. That a healthy Victor is her greatest shot at getting Chase home So everything is pointing her in that direction. Janet works for Janet.
Pete, how can people be in touch with you, much like Fred? How can the future Freds be in touch?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,261 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with a PH, all one word. Like it today. When you play dominoes with us online, we don't throw matches and we always remember.
Pete, we will be back on the Pop Culture Podcast tomorrow with our rerun of the Star Wars Holiday Special commentary track, which is a chore to get through, but you know what? We can get through it all together, friends. Our Runaways podcast will return on Friday with episode 204, and then we will start the cycle again for the following week with Runaways episodes every Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. With that, Pete, I'm going to say spark to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Thank you. You brought the light today. I didn't notice that police car. We're doing 90 in my mom's new Porsche. And to make this long story short, when the cop pulled me over, I was scared as hell. I said, I don't have a license, but I drive very well, officer. I almost had a heart attack that day. Come to find out, the girl was a 12-year-old runaway. I was arrested. The car was